All right. Welcome to the first ever podcast that is without Jeremy Mouse. This is the MWC Connection podcast, Mount West Connection, on our website, www.mwcconnection.com. My name is Christopher Hondros, at Greek Padre is my Twitter handle, and I'm joined tonight with Matthew Kennerly, our other editor and sometimes third co-host on this show. His Twitter handle is at MattK_FS. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
I'm battling whatever sickness is going around right now.
Great. It's the sickness of midway through bowl season. That's really what it is.
It's the sickness of having watched the Hawaii Bowl.
Well, yeah. Does that sickness ever go away, though?
Eventually, with time, but it comes back.
So basically, it's like Pat Hill's mustache.
It's like the common cold. You know, you get it like once a year for some reason.
We get a co-host a podcast tonight, and we're without Jeremy.
That's gonna be fun.
So what's your thoughts? Initial thoughts on this?
It's gonna be an adventure. It's gonna be fun. I think that people enjoy us going off topic. They may have some treats ahead of them.
Our off topic gets a different off topic than Jeremy and ours off topic or whatever we usually do.
We may be dangerously so. Yes.
So then let's go ahead and start before we get in.
All right.
So no real news to report. I mean, we could talk about basketball, but this is a football podcast right now, so.
Actually, there have been a couple of things. I don't know if it's exactly breaking, but there have been a couple of things that have developed tonight.
Ooh.
I talked about them.
Yeah, let me in.
Our own Joshua Carvalho, who covers Colorado State for us, he retweeted something on Twitter earlier from ESPN's Brett McMurphy that new Rams coach Mike Bobo has brought on Central Florida defensive coordinator Tyson Summers to be his DC.
Nice. So you have a DC who hired a DC.
Exactly.
Wow.
And the other big thing is that former Utah State head coach Gary Anderson, who we all know is at Oregon State now, hired not one, but two Mountain West coordinators to be a part of his new staff.
I did read about that.
Dave Baldwin, Colorado State's offensive coordinator, going to Corvallis, and so is Utah State offensive coordinator Kevin McGivin.
Interesting.
So I guess what I want to ask you is, how do you see those moves initially impacting 2015?
You know, I can't say... I don't know. That's really weird. I think Dave Baldwin move will be a heavy heavy hit for Colorado State's offense, just because of the fact that Baldwin was part of McElwain's own process, and he didn't follow McElwain to Florida. He did coach in the Las Vegas Bowl, and that kind of really sucked a little bit.
Yeah.
So I also think, though, that his offensive style is not the same. It's similar to Mike Bobo's run the dang ball, Bobo.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, you did have Garrett Grayson, who was one of the top passers in the league.
Yeah, but, you know, even then, he's moving on next year. I guess, you know, how do you think, you know, a new offensive coordinator coming in is going to impact whoever has to step up next, which, if I'm not mistaken, is Nick Stevens, right?
Right. Well, I think for me, it's one of those things that it's going to be, like, the new offensive coordinators, they're going to have freedom to do what they want, but at the same time, they still have to exercise caution with how the head coach wants this to be run. And McElwain is a completely different... I feel like McElwain is a completely different, you know, or style of head coach than maybe Mike Bobo, and this is his first head coaching gig, if I'm correct in saying that. I'm too lazy to look it up right now. Then what Mike Bobo's style is going to be. And so I think for Stevens to be successful as the new offensive coordinator, I think he's going to have his own little wrinkles, but I think he will definitely have to take leadership orders from not just Dave Baldwin and McElwain, but rather you're the main guy for just the offense, but you still have to report to the AG. And there's probably going to be a little bit more cooperative work in there because of the fact you're not working with three guys now, you're really only working with one.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I'll argue the opposite point. I think that losing McGivin is going to hurt the Aggies more than losing Baldwin will hurt the Rams.
I totally agree. I think losing Givin does provide some problems for the Aggies.
Because, considering the amount of turmoil they had with all the injuries they had under center this year, that, if he was kind of the guy who was flying under the radar, ensuring that the offense kind of, they may not have been totally explosive, but remaining at least moderately functional, despite losing quarterback after quarterback. And, he's going to Oregon State, and he's going to be coaching the quarterbacks over there. So I think that, for a team that wasn't that explosive to begin with, losing a coordinator who was able to patch something together like that, I think is going to be a big question mark heading into next year.
So here's my question to you then.
Okay.
So McGivin was the offensive coordinator /
quarterback
coach at Utah State. And as you mentioned, every single Utah State quarterback under the fray essentially got injured at one point or another, to the point where you did see the fifth string quarterback / actual wide receiver for a couple plays.
Mm-hmm.
And splinter back offense. One thing about Oregon State, they've traditionally always been strong at quarterback. You think with the addition of McGivin to Oregon State, is that going to enhance their quarterback play, or is that going to kind of keep it constant?
Well, I think that honestly it remains to be seen because, obviously when Anderson left Utah State, he had Chucky Keaton as his quarterback, right?
Right.
And, when he moved to Wisconsin, what he really benefited from was their powerful running game. Obviously, we all know Melvin Gordon. He's probably going to be a high draft pick in next year's draft. But their quarterback play was not very good the last couple of years in Wisconsin. So whether bringing these guys on board leads to better recruiting, I think that's still kind of a mystery, in my opinion.
Okay, fair enough. So next topic to play around with.
Okay.
So you saw the Fiesta Bowl mascot, I assume?
As terrifying as it was, yes.
As terrifying as it was. Okay, well, we have some great referees. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, that's really weird. So we here in the Mountain West have dealt with our fair share of terrifying mascots. So question number one.
Okay.
Name the Fiesta Bowl mascot.
Name the Fiesta Bowl mascot.
Name the Fiesta Bowl mascot.
Question
number two. Who would win in a fight between the famous Idaho potato and your now newly named Fiesta Bowl mascot?
Okay. First of all, I think the first thing that came to mind, and it's not a very good name, is Sonny. and then the second name that I thought of was Ray. Those are kind of terrible names for a son.
But very fitting, albeit very fitting.
I think that the Idaho potato has a height advantage. I think that it has a slightly longer reach, at least according to this Reddit photo that I'm staring at right now. And I think both those things would give the potato an edge in a fight between the two. So I would take the potato.
Yes! I would take the famous Idaho potato in most fights, period.
Well, plus the potatoes, they never roam alone. They're always in packs. Like you saw those commercials, right?
Right, no, totally.
There's never just one terrifying potato. There were multiple terrifying potatoes.
Okay, so my other my other thought, and this is continuously going with the off-topic theme, but it really sort of is on topic since we're staying with, football.
Okay.
So you're a 49ers fan.
I am.
Obviously, Harbaugh won today, and then the team has has parted ways with Coach Jim Harbaugh.
Yes.
So, but what college football jobs are open right now?
Michigan.
But Michigan's already offered.
What other jobs are open? That's an excellent question. I can't think of any other ones off the top of my head.
Yeah, Florida got actually, Okay.
What'd
you say? Vanderbilt's open right now, aren't they?
No, they got the Stanford defensive coordinator.
Did they actually hire him?
Yeah, they hired him last year. Last year was year one.
Yes.
It wasn't a very good year one. But...
Well, and Vanderbilt's never a good team ever.
Yeah, I was going to say that's Vanderbilt for you. I think most of the other positions have been filled already.
Okay, so here's a total, troll move and completely hypothetical situation.
I'm ready
and
for
you
it.
Tell me the level of believability. Okay.
What's the scale? Is it like 1 to 10?
Define the scale. What do you mean?
Like the scale of believability. Like 1, let's say 1 is totally unbelievable and 10 is totally believable.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. Between 1 and 10, scale of believability. Okay? So Harbaugh and the 49ers parted ways. Harbaugh's now looking for a job. Michigan's offered him $49 million for 6 years. But at the same time, we've read, if you are an avid college football fan like the rest of us, Kyle Whittingham and the Utah president, Utah athletics director, had a sort of falling out. And sources were reporting on Friday, at least, that it was highly unlikely that Whittingham would be starting coaching the football job next year.
I did read about that.
Yes. Completely hypothetical. Complete rumor. Who knows what the hell is going on there? But suppose this is true. So suppose Whittingham and the president sever ties. Whittingham's out of job. Utah job's open.
Okay.
Level of believability. Harbaugh goes to Salt Lake.
Okay.
In what is ultimately the biggest troll move ever for 3 years, $24 million. So roughly the same amount of money that he would be getting at Michigan. And let's make it 4 years, $30 million. Okay, because every good coach should have a four-year scale, right? Mm-hmm. So less of an opportunity or less year tied contract or more of a chance for extension or firing, and the buyout clause is actually higher.
Mm-hmm.
Would he take that Utah job over Michigan, basically screwing one of the most quote-unquote storied franchise programs because, hey, their top choice didn't come home?
Okay, well, first of all, you can't put quotes around successful because they have been successful. They're the winningest program in the history of college football.
Yes, but the last 10 years, they've been an absolute tire fire. And the state of their program right now, their whole athletics program, not just football, has taken a turn for the dumpster fire.
Well, okay, to answer your question, though, I hesitate to use absolutes, like always and never. So, you know, I say that it's a 1 to 10 scale, but I'm never going to assign a 1. So I'm going to say that it's a 2. Because I don't think that, you know, Harbaugh, first of all, has any connections to Utah whatsoever. I guess what you would ask yourself is, you know, one, is the university willing to make that kind of financial investment in the program? Like, do they have the financial wherewithal to do something like that? And also, you have to figure whether Harbaugh looks at this team and sees a better foundation on which to build upon, because he's had success in the Pac-12 before.
Absolutely, he has. Absolutely, he has.
So, but, you know, those are the two big questions to me. But, I mean, if you were asking me if that's realistic, I'm going to say no, I don't think so.
Yeah, I was just trying to create some crazy story that would just screw Michigan over.
They should hire Lane Kiffin.
No. We're saving Lane Kiffin's for after you guys somehow fire Tim DeRuiter for whatever reason.
No, Alabama's going to win the national title and Michigan's going to hire Lane Kiffin. That would be fun.
That would be wonderful. And Lane Kiffin takes the program to even worse heights. Okay, so should we go into these games?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
Do we have to go into these games?
Unfortunately, yes. That's what the
people because let's be honest, these two games were easily, and remember, the Mountain West is already 2-2 at bowl games at this point. These two bowl games were easily the worst performances by any Mountain West team. That includes Nevada's 3 points and a 16-3 loss versus Louisiana Lafayette. And that includes Colorado State's 10 points to a 45-10 loss versus Utah. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe you're not giving San Diego State enough credit in the Poinsettia Bowl. So are we going to start there?
Yeah, let's start there.
The San Diego County Credit Union Poinsettia Bowl. Navy 17, San Diego State 16. And it didn't have to be that way.
It did not. This is glorious. So the first thing we're going to point out, 4th and 5. They need 5 yards. They put the ball in Quinn Kaler's hands, who at that point in the game was, I believe, 7 of 21.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell, Rocky Long? This goes back to Donnell Pumphrey at that point in time had been averaging 6 yards a carry in that game. You need 5 yards. Give the ball to Pumphrey. They have not been stopping Pumphrey all night long. To the best of their ability. Now let's just put it this way: Pumphrey was kind of sort of stopping himself. But San Diego State rushing, they did accumulate 186 total yards on me.
Well, maybe Bob Toledo stopped caring because he retired after the game, didn't he?
Yeah, well, I mean, he said he was going to retire after the game anyway, like way before. But why would you? I mean, Rocky Long explained his choice, and he said that he would what was it? Also, the 4th and 1, the final field goal attempt of the game. He also said that he would make that attempt again. He would make that call again, is to have Hageman kick it.
Mm-hmm.
But good Lord, this was an ugly game to watch.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch all of the game, so I probably won't have as many insights about this one as you will. But I'm looking over kind of the third down play selection because I'm noticing that San Diego State was 2 of 12 on third down.
They were.
So if you want to blame the play calling, I think you really have to take a long look at what they were doing on third down too. And so I'm looking at.
Well, third down, you expect passing downs, right?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, but I mean,
passing downs or running downs.
You know, third and six in the second quarter at the Navy 20, and you know they, you know, Kaler incomplete to Adam Roberts, or you know, third and nine later in the first half. You know, 4 yards to Chase Price, and they punt it away.
Now, in defense of Quinn Kaler, he did not look 100%. He sustained an arm injury. Remember, that's where Nick Bowden took over for a while. But even after Kaler came back, he still hasn't looked the same. He hasn't looked fully recovered. And this game, he definitely didn't look recovered. He was 11 of 27, which is under 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Quite horrible. But, I mean, just still, at that point, I mean, it's 5.2 yards per attempt.
Well, I think what you said in our preview show about Chase Price being a possible key to the game was kind of spot on. You know, because you know he finished with 11 carries for 69 yards, which is over 6 yards a carry. So you know, why weren't they using him on those, you know, third and, you know, medium situations?
Right, and you're reading the third down play calling also. How many times was Donnell Pumphrey used and stuffed?
On third down?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. It's going to take me a minute to look.
I have to ask that because that's just curiosity in my opinion. On the other hand, I mean, you had Navy's offense and San Diego State, who you yourself claimed that they specialize in stopping the triple option and run option games. Still amassed 254 yards on the ground, which that's actually a lower average for Navy. It's only 4.4 yards a carry. But Keenan Reynolds, 3 of 7, 17 yards. He only had 9 yards rushing in this game, 19 carries for 9 yards. That's a 0.5 average. He had 2 touchdowns in this game, and somehow he won the MVP, offensive MVP.
Well, I mean, they kept the chains moving, and that's kind of the big difference in the game, I think.
Right, but like, if you were to ask me, honestly, I would have thought that fullback Chris Swain should have gotten. Yeah. 8 carries, 72 yards, and the big one was that 24-yard run, which he was huffing and puffing, and almost made it to the goal line, and couldn't get there all the way.
Okay, so here's what the play calling looks like for San Diego State on third down. You know, first quarter, third and four at midfield, complete pass to Larry Clark for 10 yards. Third and 10 at the Navy 36, Kaler gets intercepted. Third and four, Pumphrey, well, that's at the goal line, so he scored a touchdown there. Third and 12, Kaler for 5 yards, a 5-yard run. Let's see. Third and 6, Kaler incomplete to Roberts. Third and 9, 4 yards to Price. Third and 6, incomplete to Paul Pitts.
So basically what you're saying is on third down, most of those downs were passing downs.
That's what it looks like.
And the only 2 times that third down was converted was at the beginning of the game, where Kaler, probably off a screen, got to Larry Clark for 10 yards. And the other third down was the Pumphrey touchdown.
That's certainly
those are the only 2 times that – those are the only 2 times. And all of these passes, I mean, you talked about Kaler's pass on third and 9, the Chase Price for 4 yards. That's essentially a swing pass. That's a shutdown pass, right? You have a better chance of picking up yardage by running Pumphrey or by running Price straight up the gut for probably 5 or 6 yards, get yourself in a manageable fourth down situation if you were to go that route.
I mean, I'm not sure how they break it down, but they have the play breakdowns here, and they're saying of their third down plays, they had 10 that were classified as third and long, and 9 of them were pass plays.
Right, that's just...
And their play calling overall was, you know, 33 runs and 27 passes. So I think what you're saying is they probably should have probably gone, like, what, 60-40 or 70-30 and just leaned on that run game for everything it had?
Yeah, and remember how I was talking in the preview show, and you were talking about this too. All San Diego State had to do was run the ball. And yeah. They would win.
And when they did, they were successful, so I don't know what happened.
I mean, even when Kaler ran the ball, he took off once. He did not get sacked in this game. He took off once, and he got a 5-yard gain on it. So what are the odds that Kaler can't find a check down man, has a little bit of open space, and he could probably run on the Navy defense, which is a very good chance.
Excuse me. Yeah, I mean, I suppose so. I mean, they had a couple chances late in the game. They were at the Navy 12, and they, you know, they had that turnover on downs that you mentioned, and then, of course, the Donnie Hageman's missed field goal at the very end.
And you enjoyed that miss so much.
I relished that. Yes.
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, this is Danny Hageman, the San Diego State kicker, who was basically tweet bashing on Fresno State during the Mountain West Championship game, saying that San Diego State should have been there and that he could have done a much better job. And he also called out his quarterback. All these tweets were deleted, but not before our Mr. Matt got to have some fun with it.
Yeah, we saved him for posterity's sake. But to be fair, the more correct answer is, maybe neither of those teams should have played Boise.
You have a better option at that point?
Well, we'll get there.
It's like...
It's kind of, but honestly, though, it's kind of a bad break for him because all in all, he had a pretty good year. And when you consider where San Diego State's special teams were a year ago.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Hageman set a single season record for San Diego State by most points by a kicker. Was that what it was? It was the San Diego State record, but basically most total points by a kicker.
Yeah, I mean he had a fair argument for being the special teams player of the year. I mean, I know I went to Will Conant, but he might have been the second best kicker in the conference this year.
Let's not go that far. We all keep forgetting about Scott Harding, who should have had an easy claim to.
Yeah, Scott Harding's a punter though, not a kicker.
Yes, and he's also a punt returner. He's like the he's like the ultimate special teams guru. He could be a kicker if he wanted.
I'm talking specifically about hashtag college kickers.
Oh, okay. Well, yes, fine. Hashtag college kickers. Hageman and Conant were probably the and Pitao as well. But yeah. Bad swing of events for San Diego State. Some questionable or more than questionable play calling led to Navy getting their revenge for the 2010 loss.
Yeah, their first win against the Aztecs, if I'm not mistaken.
Huh?
Their first win against the Aztecs.
Their first win against the Aztecs in two tries.
This was their fourth try.
That's right. This was their first try. Attendance wasn't bad. It was 33,000. I thought there were more people there, but apparently not. Tons of Navy fans, though. So what lessons do we learn from if you're the Poinsettia Bowl? Always make sure you have Navy and San Diego State play, just for pure attendance purposes. Just have those two teams every single year.
Yeah, that works. If it means that they're winning the conference, it's cool with me.
So shall we go to the next bowl game?
I guess we had to sometime.
You're just dreading this, aren't you?
You know what? Here's what I'll say. We are moving on to the Hawaii Bowl. Rice 30, Fresno State 6. I tried to warn you and Jeremy.
Yeah.
I tried, and you guys didn't want to listen.
You were like, I knew Bad Burrell was going to show up.
Well, that's because Bad Burrell has shown up more often than not. That was just good sense.
That was just great intuition.
I mean, this was... you knew when Brandon Connett came into the game for that one series that the game was over. And I think at that point it was still only like 16-6. So, I mean, it wasn't as though it was impossible for the Bulldogs to come back, but they just looked pretty much miserable from start to finish.
How do you look that bad? I'll admit, I didn't watch any of this game because Christmas Eve and family. Martiz Waller, only 76 yards on the day, and 41 of those came on one run. So if you took that away, I'm going to take this away right here.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you don't want me to take it away.
Go for it.
Okay. Doing a little bit of calculations here.
This is the part
of my computer's slow tonight.
The part of the podcast where Chris does math.
Hey, zero
math is hard.
I knew that. No. Is it 35 divided by 14?
That's about...
Two and a half yards. So, take away that 41-yard run that Marquez Waller had. He averaged 2.5 yards in this game, a carry.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't for lack of trying. You go back.
Josh Quezada, similar story.
Yeah, he had a couple. He actually had a couple of big plays, but you know, give Rice credit because they tried to run the ball early. They leaned a lot on Waller on their opening drive, and he was going for a loss sometimes. They did the same thing. You know, they were able to move the ball a little more successfully on their second drive, which is when they evened the score. But you know, after that, that's when you get into trouble. That's when you got Brian Burrell throwing it right to J.C. Blasingame. And that's when Rice takes a 2-touchdown lead, and it looks like the offense is never going to threaten. Because they came out in the second quarter, and Burrell threw the ball a lot more than he probably should have.
But and then he was replaced by Zach Green.
Not before he was replaced by Connett, though.
Connett doesn't seem to have like a natural play in this. Maybe I missed something.
That's because he handed the ball off 3 times, I think. Yeah, it was right at the end of the third quarter. You know, Waller for 7 yards, Waller for 1 yard, Quezada loss of 2. That was the only fair team.
So, I mean, God, oh my goodness.
I mean, I said it in my recap. Brian Burrell is not good at football. And it kind of threw...
Are they going to keep him next year, or what?
What?
Are they going to keep him next year?
Well, he's a senior next year, so he's going to be in the mix. But I'll tell you right now, if he's the starting quarterback, we're not going to win the conference. And we'll be lucky if we're 6-6 next year.
Quit your back offense.
Oh, Lord. No, it's just, it's one of those things where it's, if you go back and you watch the game, he was doing exactly what he did all year long. He was, you know, overthrowing receivers. He was, I mean, he could never hit receivers in stride. And, I mean, there were certain instances where his playmakers weren't doing him any favors. I remember, you know, one instance where Aaron Peck had a drop at some point. Justin Johnson had another drop on a catch and run. So, his, you know, sometimes his receivers weren't doing him any favors, but he was just, like, totally inaccurate the entire game. And it didn't help that the offensive line was... They basically lost the matchup to Rice's defensive line, which was one of those things that I mentioned in the preview. This team had 12 tackles for loss.
Yeah, this is... And this is this game really isn't one that you can, like... place on, oh, why'd the defense give so many points? Because if you look at the defense's front seven, like, they gave up 137 yards rushing, but like, their Rice's leading rusher, Jawan Davis, 13 carries, 46 yards. His longest was 24. So you take that away, and that's, like, a yard, like, that's under 2 yards a carry that he picks up. And same thing all the way down. Dreyfus Jackson, Rice's main quarterback, his stats, his yards per average, 13.3. That's tons. 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. So the secondary giving up huge plays, playing extremely soft. But even then, he only had 15 completions for 24 attempts. That's not a great percentage completion.
Yeah, I mean, I forget who put it out there, but there was at one point, I think it was either late in the third quarter, early in the fourth quarter, somebody mentioned that Rice had 3 plays of 50-plus yards passing, and Fresno State had 50 yards passing, period.
Yeah, this is that's true. That's so 1 play of 53 yards. 1 play of 53 yards to Dennis Parks. Mario Hall had 3 receptions for 82 yards, but one of those receptions was the 69-yard touchdown. Or was that not a touchdown? Was that a touchdown?
No, that was a touchdown where you know Malcolm Washington had pretty good coverage on him. But when Hole went to adjust for the football, he got turned around, and Hole basically had nothing but green left in front of him at that point.
And then Derek Dilliard, another Rice receiver who only had 2 receptions for 57 yards, had 1 reception for 58 yards.
He's one of their big running backs. That's why it was a screen pass where you know the front seven was aggressive, and he just kind of slipped down to the flat and. There was nobody in front of them.
So, yeah. But, I mean,
the other big one was the 40-yard touchdown to Parks, like you mentioned, in the third quarter. And that was another one where they really kind of picked on Malcolm Washington. He got tangled up in the block on the wide receiver screen. And then, you know, Parks got to the outside, put a stiff arm on Donovan Lewis, and took him to the house.
Hold on. You mean to tell me, once again, I didn't watch this game. So you mean to tell me two of Dennis Parks' 5 receptions accumulated 93 yards of his 109 total yards?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. That's in like, yeah, that's your over pursuit right there. That's, wow.
Yeah, it was just one of those things where, I mean, I think the 30 points, honestly, are a little deceptive because, you know, Malcolm Washington, he played pretty well in the last month, but, you know, they picked on him a lot in this game. Overall, though, I think when it was still close in the first half, that was because the defense made a lot of adjustments. There were a lot of big hits in this game on both sides. I think there was one sack, I think, that Rice's Brian Nordstrom had. It was like a 10-yard loss, but he hit real hard, and they wiped it out. It was wiped out because of a penalty, but I think that Carl Mickelson had a sack of his own on Dreyfus Jackson where he put a lick on him. And if you look at the drive chart, in the middle of this game, they had their chances. You know, from the second quarter, I think, to just after halftime, you know, three and out, 6 plays, 0 yards, and then to end the half, and then another 3 and out coming out of halftime. It was just that the offense was horrific.
Yeah, and here's the thing: even the score, late third quarter, 23-6, Rice had the lead. After that 40-yard pass, that's still a 17-point game. You can easily score 17 points. Within that rest of that time, if there was some competence on offense.
You think.
The key word there is some competence.
Well, and if you look at the drive chart, they tried going back to Waller, and he actually had a little bit of success, and that was when Burrell threw his second interception. It was after Park scored that touchdown. You know, the drive started with 6 minutes left in the quarter. They moved the ball, and then Burrell turned it over. And I mean, I said in the preview, I thought he was going to have 3 interceptions, and he very well might have if they hadn't benched him.
So, So, I mean, I think we're going to have a podcast that kind of recaps all the teams and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think the prognosis is for... What do you think the prognosis is for Fresno State in the future? Because this, I mean, this is two straight years. I mean, Fresno State hasn't won a bowl game in, like, forever. Or at least it seems that way. And it seems like this is a very different team than the team that won the conference last year. Although they also got blown out in the Las Vegas Bowl, which kind of could have foreshadowed the season, period.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be... There's a lot of things up in the air. Because, you know, maybe the names aren't as big, but they're losing a lot of key pieces off of this team going into next year. You know, Darren Smith is probably going to get drafted next year. Josh Harper, he's going to find a job on Sundays. But not only that, but like guys like Carl Mickelson, who led the team in tackles, he's moving on. You know, they lost their kicker this year, Colin McGuire, so that might be an area where they look to, you know, fill the void. Although I will point out, Cody Cronin may have played better than just about anybody in this game. And, you know, because he had two field goals and probably should have had a third one except for, like, really terrible play calling. And, you know, I'll come back to that. But just basically, you know, they're losing guys, you know, on both sides of the ball. You know, Mickelson, Davison, I believe Donovan Lewis is also moving on. So, you know, they need some of these guys to step up that really kind of disappointed this year. I had really high hopes for someone like Aaron Peck, and he just didn't take that step forward like I thought he would. Or, you know, guys like, you know, Michael Lazarus and Xavier Olutu, who, you know, they're supposed to be building blocks, but they didn't play in this game because of some, you know, undisclosed violation of team policy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So those guys are going to have to be contributors next year, but whether they can be, it's kind of an open question at this point.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know what to think about Fresno State anymore. I really don't.
I'll tell you what to think about it. If they can't find a quarterback, this team is doomed from the start. And you saw it from the very beginning in that USC game. They couldn't make up their mind. They didn't make up their mind for a month. And, you know, everybody kind of paid a price for it. And you're going to have four guys going into next spring who have a reasonable chance, and should have a reasonable chance, to compete for the starting job. Not just Burrell and Greenlee, but, you know, a guy like Kilton Anderson, who redshirted this year, and Chasen Virgil, who, by the way, was kind of chastised a little bit on Twitter by Derek Carr for kind of calling out the offense a little bit.
Because, of course, he was.
He was, but, I mean, honestly, I feel like he had good reason to, and I don't blame him for it, because I would have done the same thing. But all those guys should have some skin in the game. One of those guys is going to have to step up, or it's going to be a really long 2015. And I'll leave it at that for now.
Yeah.
But honestly, though, it doesn't matter who's under center if, you know, the coaches can't get their act together. Like I mentioned a couple minutes ago, and this is something I want to come back to because it kind of tells you everything you need to know about this game and this season. And if you didn't read my article about my recap of this game, it's 16-6 midway through the second quarter, 4th-and-1 on the Rice 18-yard line, right?
Right.
Burrell comes out, I believe it was with four receivers. They call a wide receiver screen to the far side of the field, and it gets blown up for a loss of three. Now, by this point, Cronin had already made two field goals of 40 or more yards. So, you know, if you were following the game on Twitter, you wouldn't have been able to understand why they wouldn't just kick another field goal. If Cronin, you know, because that would have put them within one score at that point. And, I mean, they call that really dumb fourth down play. They give the ball up, and they were never that close again. And that's the kind of thing that if you've been watching as much Fresno State as I have this year, it's come up again and again, and it's really just kind of infuriating.
Interesting. I hate being this serious, but it's one of those things that, you know, what is we, like I said, we in the Mountain West, we have one game left, and we're going to get to preview that game here soon, probably tomorrow. And this is late Sunday night that we're recording this. But it feels like on a season-to-season basis, the Mountain West is either really, really high, like they'll go almost undefeated in their bowl games, or they'll just have a horrible, horrible season like what we're having this year. And is that something that needs to be remedied for the conference, to redeem in the conference eyes to basically stay as the second, you know, or the sixth best conference in the nation?
Well, I think, you know, if Boise can beat Arizona, and, you know, I think you're going to be previewing that with Hank or somebody else. But if they can, I think that'll do a lot to kind of, you know, repair our image at present. Because if you look at the teams that we've lost to so far, we've lost to a 7-5 Rice team from the Conference USA. You know, Nevada lost to the false Sun Belt champions. Colorado State got run off the field by a, at least strong defensively, Utah team. So, I mean, I guess some of those are more reasonable to expect than others, but you have to put better showings on the field every chance you get against teams that are essentially your peers if you want to be seen as kind of the preeminent Group of Five conference.
Well, I think that's going to basically do it for the podcast tonight.
Sorry, folks. Sorry for being a downer.
That's such a depressing note to end on. I really don't like depressing. Man, isn't there anything we could do to make this better? okay. Well, let's see. So, on a happier note, let's get away from Mountain West depressing bowl games.
Okay.
So what's been your favorite bowl game so far to watch? I assume you've watched almost all of them at this point.
I've watched a fair share of them.
Okay.
That's a tough one. I think my favorite probably been the Bahamas Bowl.
I'm right with you on that. I want to get like a Mountain West bid in the Bahamas Bowl because if things are that crazy down there, that was a ridiculous game to watch. And that the whole thing with Central Michigan and not converting that 2-point conversion.
Why are you going to call a fade? Come on.
Because Dan Enos.
I guess.
So anyway, once again, that was a happier note that we ended on. You've been listening to the Mountain West Connection podcast. Once again, www.mwcconnection.com. I'm Chris Andros at Greek Padre. That's Matthew Kennerly at MattK_FS. And we will be seeing you later.
Well, be sure to find us on iTunes, rate us,
Oh, yeah. iTunes, Stitcher Radio. What else are we on?
Stitcher.
I said Stitcher, iTunes. Please give us a rating. Tell us that we're awesome or, you know, that we need to improve. Once again, this is a complete test trial with only Matthew K. and I. So you won't actually be hearing the... You'll find out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm assuming Jeremy will be back next time.
We assume.
Fingers crossed.
Unless something happens to him that doesn't make us permanent co-hosts forever.
More toilet issues, perhaps?
Merry Christmas, Jennifer.
That's our ending hook right there. That's our high note.
Yeah. All right. Damn it. Stop broadcast now.